My room at the Duck and Puddle overlooked the village green. Mrs. Parsons, who seemed disappointed to discover that her new guest was as prone to falling over as her husband and the rest of her customers, performed the usual rituals without enthusiasm. She opened the window and then shut it again. She opened the wardrobe, rattled the row of wire hangers which hung on a single wooden rail, and then shut it again. She pointed to the sink and told me what it was, showed me how the taps worked, and pressed a hand on the bed to demonstrate its pliability. She then pointed out the bedside lamp, the tiny child's desk and chair that stood beside the window, opened and shut the drawers of the dressing table, and pulled the cord, which dangled over the bed, to turn on the main light. As she left the room, she used the light switch just by the door to turn the light off again. She paused just before she left. "Dr. Brownlow asked if you would be kind enough to call on him as soon as you've settled in," she announced rather formally. Having passed this message on, she looked around, as though taking a last-minute inventory, turned away, and closed the door behind her. Sitting at a huge, scrubbed pine kitchen table in the centre of the room was a bald, plump man in his late 60s or early 70s, who looked over his half-moon spectacles as I entered and beamed broadly. Apart from a window set high in one wall, the room was lined with shelves upon which stood rows of books and dusty, bound copies of old medical and scientific journals. Behind the seated occupant of the room stood an examination couch, which was piled high with yet more books. Tufts of horsehair showed that the contents of the couch were making a determined effort to escape. The room's occupant waved a hand in greeting.
"I'm Dr. Brownlow. Thank you for coming."
He looked over my shoulder at the elderly manservant who was still hovering behind me.
"Thank you, Bradshaw," he said.
Then he looked at me.
"Would you like a cup of tea?"
"No, thank you," I said. "I'm fine."
"Wise fellow," whispered Dr. Brownlow confidentially. "Bradshaw has never got the knack of making tea, and Ethel's out somewhere today."
He peered around me and raised his voice again.
"That's all, thank you, Bradshaw."
I heard the door behind me click shut as Bradshaw left, and realised that 30 square feet of solid oak makes a very different noise to the average modern door. I looked around. "Is this your study?"
"It's my consulting room," answered Dr. Brownlow. "It used to be the gun room, but it's one of the few rooms in the house that is small enough to keep reasonably warm in the winter."
He pointed the pen he was holding back over his shoulder towards two large electric fires, which stood side by side behind him. Even though it was still only autumn, both fires were switched on.
"Sit yourself down," he said,
nodding to the empty chair in front of his table. I sat down and suddenly had a bizarre vision of a long line of infirm patients struggling along the corridor down which I'd just walked.
"Patients come to the back door,"
explained Dr. Brownlow, as though reading my thoughts.
"It's a bit quicker," he sighed. "Hardly anyone comes to the front door any more. When they do, Bradshaw always likes to give them the silver tray treatment."
I nodded. "I'm afraid I don't have any visiting cards."
"No one ever has," said Dr. Brownlow. "At least no one I ever want to see. The last man who put a visiting card on that tray was a double-glazing salesman from Bristol. He was so excited by the prospect of double-glazing this house that it took me half a day to get rid of him."